Blog Talk Radio.
If you love Carol, you have landed right in the midst of your tribe. Welcome to Beyond World at caroltribe.com. Beyond World is powered by Tarot. What is Tarot?
Covers our main, the human story.
That makes you better, not only in terms of what you can get from the cards, but in terms of all the stuff you learn, if you really love the cards and you want to know more about them.
Somehow reflect all of the situations in life, that you can find a card to describe every circumstance.
We focus heavily on tarot education for the serious reader. Meet the world's premier tarot readers, deepest thinkers, metaphysical teachers, and deck creators who help you go deeper into your own deck and connect you with your own inner knowing. Attend the world's best tarot classes right here, all free.
Art history, brain chemistry, astrology, Kabbalah, whatever it is that we are interested in. And we keep learning and adding things to that backbone.
Find your passion and join your tribe at tarottribe.com. The voice of tarot.
Hi, everybody. Welcome tonight to Beyond World. We're going to have a wonderful archetypal journey tonight. Why are archetypes important to you as a reader? You'll find out they are very important to understanding your clients, understanding where they are in their life. And I think if you understand the patterns of archetypes and how they build kind of a pyramid in our life, that it will help you as a reader understand things that your client may be capable of doing and not doing, or kind of a journey that they're taking to understanding what that is. We like to say when we're doing readings, we see patterns, and I think a pattern is a great way to consider something like an archetype. Are they similar? Are they the same? Can you call one the other? So we'll talk about what an archetype is, and we're going to pull that right into what it is as it has a relationship to tarot. So welcome, everybody. It is Sunday, March 18th, 2012. It's a beautiful day today, and I am very happy to have my co-host tonight, astrologer Valerie Sylvester. Hi, Valerie.
Hello.
Welcome. And I hear you were gardening today.
Yes, I was. I was out in the beautiful weather, taking advantage of it and putting a few pansies in the garden this morning, this afternoon, too.
Yeah. Pansies are my favorite. Yes, purple pansies especially. Yes. I like the purple ones.
Yeah, that's what I put in, yeah.
Oh, good. Well, I think we're going to have to wait another couple of weeks so they'll get probably frostbite here, but who knows?
Yeah, you're further north than we are, so yeah.
Yeah, because you have daffodils. We don't have daffodils.
Yes, we do already, yeah.
Jealous. Okay, let's get right into our tarot tip. I'm going to do a quick little tarot tip that we used on our beginner astrology book club. We're studying Corinne Kenner's book, Tarot and Astrology, and each week there's a little homework. It takes maybe, half an hour at most to do. And some people are really getting into it and making more of their homework and learning a lot. But I thought I would share one of the little things that we did this week with people so you could try it at home. And, of course, Valerie, with you being an astrologer, this would be an excellent thing for you to have. So if you grab your deck, we'll do a little sample of this. So many of us have heard of the astrology reading, the astrology wheel. You have 12 positions. You put a card next to each one, and you can see how each card interacts with that number wheel or the energies in that wheel, so that you kind of create a reading about the person you're sitting with. And that's a very common thing. But the thing is, that's a very long reading. You really have to devote at least an hour. I've even seen people do 90 minutes with a reading like that. So if you want to do a kind of an abbreviated form of it, or if people want to know a general outlook and you don't know what to talk about and they're not giving you a theme to talk about, here's what you do. Get a little piece of paper or index cards, and you're going to cut it up into 12 evenly sized small rectangles, and you're going to write a number on each one, 1 to 12, and you'll have a little mini deck of those numbers. Another thing you can do if you don't want to do the index cards, you can actually use your tarot deck. So ace would be 1, then you have 2 through 10, and then 11 and 12 would be the page and the knight. And if you had any of the other cards, just disregard them, the majors, or actually you could use the numbers on the majors after 1 through 12. So here we go. So what you want to do is you want to shuffle those numbers, and you want to come up with, I find it easy to do a two-card spread. I think it's very interesting the way they interact. So if you were to pull out, say, shuffle it up, you come out with number 1, and you shuffle it again, and you come out with number 10. Now you have the two positions of your spread. So, Valerie, the astrology house number one, because we drew the number one, what would that tell us about that person? What would we be seeking information about?
Well, it would probably say a lot of about the way the person is presenting themselves to you. So I think one of the things to look at is, what's the persona? You know, what are they coming across as? How are they coming across to you? You know, it's very important to sort of figure out what they're expressing through, you know, just observation. You know, take a look at them. It's kind of like the ascendant in astrology. The first house is the house of self, of, you know, what you're projecting outward and what people are picking up, you know, from that. So, you know, I think the thing is, that means that the person kind of wants to focus on certain aspects of their own personality, and a lot of it is about, the first house is about their personality or persona, how they project. So that's kind of an important clue. It's like, you know, there's something that they want to talk about, let's say, that relates really specifically to themselves and their persona in the world and how they present themselves. And, you know, maybe there's an issue with that, you know, that particular subject, you know.
Excellent. So that would be great. So what we'll do shortly is we'll draw a card, and we'll tie it in with that, and we'll see how they come together.
Okay.
The second position, let's say it's the number 10, so that would be our 10th house. What would that bring us?
So that would be, the 10th house would be, that's the how you, it's sort of your destiny or your place in the world. You know, it's the parental axis, you know, the 10th house and the 4th house. So it has something to do with your family history, your parents, also how you project yourself in your, not necessarily just career, but in what you're sort of destined to do. It's not really like your day-to-day job. It's more like, you know, what is it that you were here to do? You know, what's your destiny? What's your, you know, how do you project out in that area? You know, it's another, it's also like the first house, the 10th house is another one of the, it's on the angles. So it's an important house in terms of, you know, things happening for the person. So that would mean the person is probably really thinking about either, you know, job direction, family situation, or, you know, their destiny, like, what am I here for in life? You know, it's a big issue stuff. Like, you know, why am I here? What am I doing? Why am I doing it? You know, it's that kind of a thing.
Okay, so what a great little spread we have. So the number one is, who are you? And the second one is, like, what is my purpose then, really, if we put those
yeah,
two together?
Yeah, basically, yeah.
All right, so which deck do you have in front of you?
I have the Illuminated.
Oh, my favorite, with the glitter.
Yeah, right?
Okay, so
I always use that one.
Yep, that's like the Rider-Waite pictures, if anyone is not familiar with that deck. So let's pull a card for one about our identity, who we are, how we project ourselves, and what do you get?
I get the Queen of Wands, so that tells you, you know, this person is projecting, you know, you've got to approach them. I think what it's saying is you've got to approach them in a very sort of energetic, fiery way. You've got the Queen of Wands there, so you're dealing with someone who has a great deal of focused energy and who's kind of looking to maybe to channel that energy in some way. Maybe the issue is, you know, how do I channel this energy? How do I focus this powerful energy that's coming out, you know, from the Queen of Wands? So it just means also that you should maybe approach them very energetically, and, you know, it says something about the way you should approach them too, I think. Just like in a very lively, energetic, and emotional kind of, not emotional in like the cups, but more like just lively and sort of engage them. You know, they're willing to be excited. You know, I mean, that's essentially what it's saying here. They want to be excited about something. They want to get enthusiastic, and they want to be creative. So, I mean, I think that's what that's saying with the first house.
Oh, she's me. You know, it would be interesting to ask Tony later what the archetype of the Queen of Wands, maybe what kind of archetypes fall under her. Yeah. Okay, so if we look under destiny in our public persona, what would that be for our second card?
Let's see, the second card I'm getting is the Magician. So here's something that's telling you about, you know, it is definitely like what, you know, it's telling you that you need to sort of marshal your skills and your abilities. And, you know, use your mind. You know, with Magician is ruled by Mercury, so it's a very mental card in certain ways, but it's mental focus of your skills to achieve something. So what that's saying is that, you know, now it's time to, if you put the two cards together, it's really saying it's time to focus all of your energy towards your goals using the skills that you already have, you know, based on the Magician and the power that you have. You can channel that energy to manifest, you know, to create whatever. It's a very creative combination, I think, these two. So I think it's calling you, I think, to be more creative in your life, you know, and to pull out, you know, ways in which you can do that, you know, using your skills.
Excellent, excellent. And what a great little surprise card that turned out to be.
Yeah, that was nice.
Kind of a quick and dirty reading. So if you don't know what to do the reading on, if they want a general one, there you go. You can do it on yourself. What do you need to know right now?
So very, very good. Thank you for that. That was very helpful. I like the way you interpret them, and it helps me to hear you with those positions in the astrology wheel me, because I'm
put it all together.
Right? Yeah, put it all together. Mm-hmm. All right. Quick things for people. You know, we have a Facebook page. We'd love to have you join us there. Just fan us there and get all the kind of updates that you need. Also on iTunes. You know, I don't really ever mention this, but it would mean a lot to us if the show has been useful to you, if you find that, you know, it's been something that's been of value to your ability to read tarot or just inspired you. If you could write a little comment, say something there in regard to what the show has meant to you, that would be very meaningful to us, and we have a lot of gratitude if you were to do that, because it helps bring people to tarot, helps bring people to our lessons, and hopefully will help inspire more people in the world to try tarot. So we invite you to if you can, leave a comment there. We thank you for that. And, you know, do you have any announcements you want to make, Valerie, before we jump into our guest?
No, nothing new, really.
Okay. I'm very excited about this. You know, we hear a lot of people throwing around the word archetype, and I'd like to really spend some good time tonight talking about it and how it impacts a tarot reading. So, you know, how the book that goes with this, I was reading all week long Tony's book. It's called Gaining Archetypal Vision, a guidebook for using archetypes in personal growth and healing. It's one of two books that she has on archetypes. The other one is called Messages from the Archetypes, Using Tarot for Healing and Spiritual Growth. So what I learned was a lot of things about the essence of life and living and the things that we do, and how that ties into our tarot readings. So we'll talk tonight about what is an archetype. We'll find out more and understand better the essence of your deck, and also the psychology of your clients, which will help you be a better reader, because you'll be able to approach them from the right angle or the right foundation. They may not be able to access certain things until they get through a certain archetypal stage. So understanding all those layers of psychology do help us know about where people are at and what they cannot process until they get out of one experience to get into one that they're actually ready for. So, you know, we'll talk about gaining the ability to see archetypes in everyday living. It's a spiritual journey. It's a pilgrimage to your authentic self. We're also going to learn to integrate principles of human development and self-actualization. All this is to help you promote healing and personal growth in you and your clients. So we'll talk about step-by-step directions to help you see archetypal traits and scenarios. We're going to learn a lot about transpersonal psychology. We're going to learn about neuroscience. We're going to learn about philosophy. All these we're going to observe for archetypal information. Now, our guest is Toni Gilbert. She's a holistic nurse and a transpersonal counselor. For over 20 years, Toni has used insight-producing modalities such as tarot and astrology. She's also used dream interpretation and other wonderful shamanic tools to enhance her own life and her alternative nursing practice as well for her clients. She has a formal education in psychology, transpersonal studies, and certifications in wellness counseling, mind-body consciousness, guided imagery, the use of imagery in medicine and aromatherapy. She's very well-rounded. She offers her clients an array of healing art techniques to enhance wellness and actually to prevent illness as well. She has a bachelor's degree in psychology and art, and this includes undergraduate classes in Jungian psychology. I had those as well. They're a lot of fun to take. She continued her interest in art and its symbolism and a graduate art therapy school, and she holds a master's degree from the Institute of Transpersonal Psychology. You can learn more about Toni on her website. It's tonigilbert.com. I'm going to spell that out, TONIGILBERT.com. So tonight it gives me great pleasure to roll out the red carpet for Toni Gilbert as we talk about archetypal patterns. Toni, welcome to Young World. Nice to have you here.
Oh, thanks. Sounds like you have quite a crowd there.
Yes. We pass out free chocolate. Pulls them in.
When they clap, so, they get the chocolate.
Yeah, we throw M&Ms out like confetti.
Yeah.
So archetypes, I guess the best place to start is to define what it is so that people can understand what we're talking about first.
Okay. Well, basically, your archetypes are are part of our consciousness. And no one knows what that is. The scientists don't know what that is, and neither do the quantum physicists. You know, our consciousness is what makes us alive. You know, and so the archetypes are in there, and they're coming through that channel. You know, so basically, no one knows what that is, so we can't know what an archetype is for sure. But we have a few theories, you know, about that. And one of the theories is that they're formulated in your brain, and then everything you see isn't really out there. That everything you see is something else, you know, entirely, you know, like quantum physics tells us. And the other theory is that we're like in this big river of information, and we're a part of it, and it's like an energetic river full of information, and we can draw on this river at any time. And we do, you know, unconsciously draw upon it as we live our lives. For instance, right now I'm being a teacher archetype. I'm living in that teacher archetype, and you're listening, and you're being a student archetype.
Right.
And
so,
what else?
Is that the collective unconscious you were talking about? Jungian's collective unconscious.
Yes,
that
that's
river.
What Jung talked about. Yeah, and that's the way I see it. You know, I've studied this for a long time. You know, since my middle 20s, I started listening to Bob Dylan. I thought, you know, how is he affecting me? I know what he's saying, you know, and I started working with that at that time, but I didn't really get any kind of answers until I finished nursing school and started my first job, and I worked with some people who were into Jungian psychology. And so I learned a lot more then, got a vocabulary, but it wasn't for another 20 years that I knew anything other than the intellectual part. And when I got to be almost 50, I discovered Tarot. And when I started working with Tarot, then it all started coming together for me.
And how? Like, what was the aha piece of information that pulled it together for
you
through
the Tarot? When I shuffled the cards, I'm a dream worker. I've been a dream worker since I was a kid. And when I shuffled the cards, see, I had this deck in my house for like 15 years, but every time I tried to use it, I just couldn't figure it out, you know, because I was trying to intellectually figure out Tarot. And then so I had this deck, and I went and got it during, you know, the beginning of my midlife crisis. And I shuffled the deck, and I laid the cards out. And because I knew about symbolism and dream work and everything, I could see that this I had just laid out what I was thinking about, you know. So I thought, well, you know, I just started putting the pieces together. This was the archetypes operating in me that was causing the cards to lay out in this synchronistic way. You know, I had all the vocabulary, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just a matter of time before I started connecting the dots. It was more of an intuitive journey from that point on. You know, you can learn a lot intellectually, and you should, and then the rest of it's intuitive.
So you talked about that we have a teacher-student archetypal relationship happening right now.
Right.
What are some of the archetypes that we can find in tarot?
Oh, they're all archetypes. You know, there's the major archetypes in the major arcana, and then the pips are what I call archetypal scenarios, you know, where they're little archetypes put together into a little story form. And then the kings and queens have their own archetypes. Pages, they're all archetypal.
So if we were to talk about the Queen of Wands that came up in our reading at the tarot tip, what would you define as a Queen of Wands type archetypal energy?
Well, they have all kinds of traits. You know, you can, but basically the Queen of Wands is intuitive and creative and has a lot of energy for projects, you know, and she has a higher level and a lower level of action, which you could see as shadow at the lower levels and light at the higher levels. And so
yep.
It expresses itself in many, many, many ways.
And,
any,
you know, I've heard... these are all the nuances of the card, the pluses, the negatives, you know,
right.
the reversals for some people, the shadow. In terms of I've had people say that the difference between the major and the minor arcana is that the majors are all archetypes, but I never quite settled right with that because I think, well, let's look at the Ten of Wands. That's burdened and carrying the stressors of life, and for me, that feels like an archetype. Like I'm the type of person who takes on a load, too much, or I've taken on more. What do you think in terms of major versus minors?
Well, just there's a rule of thumb that I use for archetypes. You can tell if it's an archetype if you can find it in throughout time. You know, the cave dweller. Think about that. You know, was he burdened? Of course he was. And throughout all the cultures of time and, you know, place, and when you're talking about form, you want to talk about places. You can find it throughout the world, basically.
Okay, so with something like a computer geek, would that be considered an archetype?
You could place an archetype there if you had the computer geek here and you had him draw a card, he might draw the King of Swords. You know, because that's intellectual and getting things done. It depends on how good he was. It might be reversed, you know, or it could be he might be a beginner. You might have the Ace of Swords.
I see. Okay, so the essence of just being a geek has nothing to do with it. It's how he channels that information through intellect.
Right,
or...
it depends on the personality.
Got it.
You know, he might be fooling himself. Then you would have a fool. It depends a lot on the channel what your archetypes come up in the cards. You know, when they're shuffling, like I said, when your client's shuffling and they lay it out, what they're basically doing is laying out a portrait of themselves. And that's happening to them at the moment they shuffle. Now, they might shuffle it again and lay it out. It would come up a little different, but, you know, you've probably seen this where the archetypes come up again a few minutes later. Does that make sense?
Let's expand on it a little bit to break it down even more. You talk, I guess we'll start big and then get into smaller pieces of it. You speak in your book of there being some recurring archetypal images. So you say that Jung outlined five major archetypes. Do you want to talk about those a little bit and how
those
play
into? Yeah. Well, a student and teacher is one of Jung's archetypes, two of Jung's archetypes, but the five that he mentioned were, you know, the mother, father, child. What else is there? Animus.
Yep,
anima.
The self, the shadow, anima, animus, and the persona.
Yeah, yeah. What about them?
Well, I guess my question is, let's bring this back to tarot. So the self, obviously, that would be like that first position that we did in the tarot tip spread. The shadow would be that kind of the negatively aspected parts, or the darker or the exaggerated parts. Tell us about the anima and the animus in each person.
Well, the animus is your feminine, you know, so that could be your the emperor. It could come up with any of the queens, too, or other cards. And the anima is the masculine, which would be the emperor, you know, basically.
Yep, so empress for anima,
yep.
And men and women each contain both male and female.
And their
right.
energies. Now, their masculine energies and feminine energies, it's not gender stuff.
Right. Now, persona, how would that differ from the self?
Persona, well, the self is the ego because it's a small s. With a large S, in when you're talking union studies, it's the large S is the soul, but the self with a small S is ego, and persona is ego is, you know, how you see yourself, and persona is how you project yourself to other people.
Okay.
How you
yes.
want other people to see you.
And that and you mentioned, too, it's how we protect the ego from negative projections on ourselves as well, which I found interesting. So the recurring ones, you actually, you had 14 recurring archetypes, and I couldn't help but think that these seem to be major arcana energies. You've got child, mother,
right.
father,
yep,
trickster,
yep.
devil,
yep,
warrior.
Yeah.
Yep, unless warrior is one of the knights or mm-hmm. something. Hero and teacher, student and magician, healer and fool,
yes,
and wise old man or woman and sage. Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's everything you need to transform your life, basically. And then the outcome, the wise old person, you know, the wise old woman, wise old man.
Right. You know, and regarding your book, there's not actually tarot spreads in here, but this helps create a foundation. But what I found is every single bulleted list you had and every single graph, because you've got a lot of graphs, can be used in terms of a tarot spread. So I could say, you know, tell me about my mother archetype. How am I expressing it? And you can put down a card. How am I? What about my wise old man or woman archetype or my healer archetype, and learn about it that through the cards
right.
as well. And each one of your graphs could be used that way.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when we look back in time, in terms of the Greek philosophers, we've got Pythagoras and Socrates and Plato and Aristotle. They each had a different type of concept for what this archetype word was. Do you want to talk a little bit about how they differed from each other or the overlap?
Not really. That is very complicated. Basically, they discussed the archetypes are basically forces in nature, you know, and so they've been with us forever. And so anybody with awareness, and they don't have television and the internet to distract them, are going to, you know, go towards, you know, well, what is this place and who are we and where are we, you know, they questioned everything, and at that time, that's when they learned to make paper, papyrus paper, and they were able to, and then writing came along, and they were able to write down their ideas for the first time. Now, there may have been people before that had those kind of ideas, and I think that there probably was, but they didn't get them written down until they had paper and pen. And then that paper and pen lasted for a long time, you know, and so we have it in our books today, you know, their information and their thoughts, you know, so it was just kind of like a... And that's kind of what I wanted to do with this book, is that I put out my thoughts, you know, out there. This is what I've spent like 35 years doing this, and this is what I think. Now, this doesn't mean it's true, but this is what I think. And I wanted to just start a discussion like the ancient philosophers did.
Right.
You know, and so,
well,
and then when somebody else says, well, this is what I think, then I will listen.
So it's,
you know,
all about semantics.
I like the idea of not being right all the time and, you know, not having one right way, and that this is because our consciousness is limited. We're not very smart, basically, at this level of development anyway. And so we need to make room for that.
Right.
And the only way for us to get smarter is to discuss things like this.
And break them down, right. One thing I want to say before talking about that breaking down, Parmenides had said that archetypal concept is basically about truth and opinion. And I found that very interesting because I think that's what life is all about, and our perception of things, what is real versus what is something that we surmise.
Mm-hmm.
Or project onto something.
Yeah, we can't know, you know, so it's a good idea to, you know, express ourselves, but then be open to what other people are seeing as well. You know, so I just felt very strongly about the archetypes, and I tend to obsess about things until I get things written down, and once I get it written down, then I can forget it a little bit. You know, but that's kind of the end process. This book has been the end process of my obsessing over this information.
So I guess I think my favorite part of your book, right on page 98, you have an amazing graph, two-page graph, that talks about the largest archetypes, the smaller archetypes, and archetypal scenarios. We can talk about this a little bit. I think what I found interesting is that the larger archetypes seem mm-hmm. to, not always, but often talk about the bigger things, like in the major arcana, those mm-hmm. mother, father, death things that we talked about. But there are some other things, too, like growth and oppression, storyteller. You have some of the signs in here, like Leo, Virgo. Some of those things, I think, can be found in the minors as well.
Right. Well, but how, like I said, I put this out there. This is what I see as being the largest archetypes, the large
okay.
archetypes. And this, the smaller archetypes, this is what I see. You know, and anybody can come along and change, put things in different places if they want to, but this is what I see. And then the archetypal right. scenarios on the other page, which I see.
Right, and you,
being,
that's, you think
I
those
see
are
the
pips?
Interesting. Being, yeah, as being the archetypal scenario.
Okay, so moving on could be like the Eight of Cups, planning for the future. What are you seeing there? I see Happy Family is the Ten of Cups.
What do I see for the Eight of Cups?
For the planning for the future.
Planning for the future. I think you lost me. What do you?
Oh, sorry. That was one of the archetypal scenarios. Some of the things that you have listed, they're wonderful. Prayer and meditation, making choices, grief over loss. These are all situations we find ourselves
okay.
in, holding on to something, lack of will, as opposed to, I guess, the smaller archetypes, which would be things like you wrote complaining, arguing, order,
mm-hmm.
effectiveness, comparing, and wondering. So these are all, they sound more like a feeling or something we do as a person, like complaining, thinking,
mm-hmm.
versus the major ones seem to define
well,
delusion.
I think that
courage.
It does. Yeah, because like, you know, take mother, for instance. That's your big archetype. You know, and then you can go over here to the archetypal scenarios, and you can see that your mother shares with others. That's the scenario. You know, so there's a little, they're like the patterns that your mother does. Or
okay,
you do.
So, right. Well, see, these are things, too, that I also think would make great little tarot spread positions. You could take mother, and then you could take, that's out of the large archetypes, and if I just stick my finger on something and I land on disappointment. That's a small archetype, so that would be your second position. And then let me pull the third one, body language. So we can talk about the third one being, the third position could be of the scenario. That would be what about her body language might have given mm-hmm. us a certain message. So all of these would make actually excellent things to explore.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, one thing I learned in psychology, and you discussed this a little bit in terms of Eric Erickson's stages of psychosocial development, as well as your chakra chapter,
mm-hmm.
about different things we learn at different levels, whether it's an age or a stage that we're at. So we talked just before the show, you know, I says, I think that the real value in this tool as a reader is understanding, for example, if a person is in that base chakra or the root chakra,
mm-hmm.
and they are in survival mode.
Mm-hmm.
They're basically in fight or flight. And we want to talk to them about finding romance. We're at the wrong level, because until one level is complete, until you feel safe and secure, you can't get to the more artsy things in life.
Right, right.
And as a reader, understanding that, you can take them at the level that they need it to
right.
address what they really need first.
Yeah, and you can also do, you can take the pyramid, and before your client gets there, you know a little bit about them. you can do a spread and ask about them. You know, so you can get some ideas going about, you know, what you're, because I don't know about you, but when I talk to somebody on the phone, I can tell a lot about them. And I get feelings about them, and I don't necessarily, I'm not able to, say, put them in words. And so I might take something like the pyramid and then do a 5-card spread from bottom to top and just ask, you know, where are they at each of these levels? And check myself. You know, it doesn't have to be something that is all that accurate, but it's something that you can do. And you can do the same thing for yourself if you're not sure where you're at or what you need at each level. I do have one on my website that I did for Catherine Chapman's site when she had tarotelements.com up. I don't think she has it up right now, but you can find, I have the article on my site, tonygilbert.com, and if you click on published articles and then go to About Tony, I'm using Maslow's Hierarchy of Needs Pyramid and Tarot to map a developmental journey, and I do that using myself, and it worked out really well. It was the first time I'd ever done it with cards. I don't know why. I just hadn't thought of it. It was Catherine's idea.
And can you tell us a little bit more about that? Tell us about the technique so we can try this.
Okay, well, you can go to my website, like I said, and there's
right.
an article that tells you how to do it, and it also gives you more information without buying my book about the archetypes and the developmental journey and Maslow and more about the pyramid. And then it tells you how to do a tarot layout, and you just take a moment to meditate upon the levels of the pyramid and ask that you be given information about your present level of development at each of the levels. And then you shuffle the card with this question in mind, and then you begin your 5-card layout at the bottom of the pyramid, placing the cards progressively upwards.
Okay.
And then with pen and paper handy, write down your impressions of the imagery in the cards and describe your assessment where you are on this developmental journey.
So does the pyramid, does one thing depend on anything before? Are they each independent of each other?
The pyramid, I'm not sure I understood that question.
Oh, well, like kind of like we talked about the chakra. Is the bottom of the pyramid necessary to complete before we can work on the next levels of it?
Not always. You know, generally, yes, but not always. You know, it doesn't always follow a lot this logical step. Yeah. So,
okay.
But you know, you do need food and water, you know, at the physiological level before you can go forward. But that doesn't mean that if you're a starving homeless person on the street that you can't have, you know, something happening at the higher levels. Peak experiences because of starvation or something. I don't know. You know, it doesn't always follow that you go from start at the bottom and go up. But most of the time, when we have normal circumstances, that's the way it goes.
Okay. Kelly in the chat room.
Take care of food and housing before you take care of relationship issues and stuff.
Definitely, yeah. I would see that, too. We have a couple questions in the chat room. Actually, let me start with Erin. She says she wonders if our birth cards would have any effect on our archetypal nature. So, you know, if we have, say, Tower Chariot, would that impact who we are as a person? Do you have an opinion about that?
I don't. I don't know. That's a tough one. I don't know if there's an answer to that one.
Right.
It doesn't make, you know.
And I don't know if this
does that make any sense?
Well, it's funny because I was reading Mary Greer's book on the birth cards, and while she doesn't necessarily use the word archetype that I remember, she talks about there being these patterns in our life and how it influences what we might be trying to do. Yeah, so, you know,
yeah,
for some people they may feel that way. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I haven't spent a lot of time with the birth cards, so, you know, I don't know. That wouldn't be something I'd have to say there.
Right.
You know, I know that what mine is, and it seems to, I just recently found out what it was. You know, I'm 65 years old. You know, so I can look back and say, yes, this has been my path, but I don't know that knowing your archetype ahead of time is going to affect that, but it might. I don't know.
I wonder. Now, let's talk about astrology a little bit, because, of course, we have astrology in those cards. And you speak about how every person is considered a whole and unique expression of universal principles, patterns, and energies based on where those signs align. So, for example, the zodiac used to be considered by ancient astrologers and philosophers as the soul of our nature.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you do talk a little bit about how science accepts tools like cartographs and cephalographs
right.
as tools to manifest our energies and our rhythms. But then you also say the astrological birth chart is a similar type of a tool.
Right.
Can you talk about how archetypes emerge and how different ways that we can express our archetypes based on what's in the stars? And Valerie, if you want to jump in here too with what you know, in terms of how it makes influences on our potentials, that would be great.
Okay. Basically, your archetypes are energetic information, you know, and the each planet is representative of a big archetype with little patterns or little archetypes in it, you know, traits. You could call your traits little archetypes and behaviors and all that stuff. And so you've got this energy stuff going on, the planets moving around in the skies, and then we're part of nature. You know, we are made of the same stuff as the stars, and we're made of the same stuff as the earth. You know, so we're all a part of this energetic happening that we call life. And so my rising sign is Pisces. And so that rising sign, that particular archetype has, at the higher levels of it, is mystical and intuitive and everything that I practice. And that is my birthright at this time, to have that Pisces energy at my back, so to speak. And my sun sign is in Gemini, and the Gemini archetype is a teacher and writer, you know, and you can look back at my life. Of course, I've been a teacher and I've been a writer, you know, and I like to talk and I like to do Gemini stuff. But I also have Uranus conjunct my sun, which is also an air sign, which is the intellect. And it makes me able to look around and see a bigger picture. So it kind of gives me a boost as far as all of that. And then my moon sign, my moon is in the 10th house. My nurturing nature is what I am here to do in the world. You know, so those are all archetypes, what I've been speaking about. Does that make sense?
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah. Valerie, is there anything you want to add to that in terms of archetypes?
No, I think that's good. I mean, I think, yeah, your chart just shows where you're going to kind of be guided to. You know, I mean, you have different energies, and obviously some people will have more of a concentration in one area, and in others some people will be focused. You know, I have a lot of fire energy, so, you know, obviously I came in to learn about, you know, dealing with that. So I think it just shows what areas are going to be highlighted in your life. And, you know, you have the potential, you know, obviously it just shows the potential of what you have to become, you know. I mean, like, what's there for you to work with, you know, what are you going to do? And you're probably going to be drawn to things that, you know, I mean, that's why, you know, difficult aspects of astrology are not always so difficult. I mean, there's sometimes, and they're not easy, but there's sometimes the building blocks that, you know, take you to that next level. So if you see that you have, you know, beginning astrology people are like, oh, no, I have, you know, a square, I have this. A lot of times that gives you the energy and the impetus to kind kind of move on and to work with your energies and to transmute them. So in a way, that's kind of a gift too, although it doesn't, you know, when you first are dealing with that energy, like say when you're very young and you don't know how to deal with it, it's hard. But you move on and you find that that's something that you were meant to focus on, you know, in order to solve a particular problem, you know, in your life. I think that, you know, it's coming into you for a reason. And I think that's why it's kind of just this energetic pattern that you flow into. And I think, you know, that's why you're drawn to certain situations. And maybe, you know, other people are doing other things and you're not interested in that particularly because maybe that is not your big purpose in life, you know, based on what your chart is showing. You know, you don't really have to divert that energy there right now. You're working on another area. So I think it's the big picture thing, you know, I guess.
Yeah. So it's really hard. Someone gets a really tough chart and you're seeing those type of energies manifest in life as you're doing your reading and, you know,
right.
Does that mean they're bound to those behaviors? Do you have to work within those behaviors to get them through their situation, or can they extricate themselves from that?
I think that they can develop past them. You know, you can recognize that. For me, I have a T-square, and that's a difficult energy. And so I had quite a few challenges in my earlier years, you know. And it was tough, but, you know, I did it, you know. And now in my later years, that T-square is at my back, you know. It just gives me the energy to put my shoulder to the wheel if I need to, you know,
and
determined.
And what's a T-square?
I'll let the astrologer answer that.
It's a configuration. I have one too. Lots of fun. It's a configuration in which you have three planets, and you know, two of them are square each other, and then one of the square ones is opposite. It forms like a triangle kind of feel. It's, you know, people describe it as a tripod, and then there's sort of a missing leg. And what happens with a T-square often is you have to try to balance the energies. It's sort of, it throws you off a little bit in terms of trying to deal with the energies because you're getting high-pressure energy coming at you from, like, these three directions. And then you have the empty spot across from, you know, the one that's not the opposition. You have an empty spot, and that's another area, like, you'll find, you know, I know in my life it's definitely been true that when anything transits through over that empty space, boom, you know, something will manifest related to, you know, the theme of the T-square. So it can be a little bit of a tricky pattern, but I totally agree with Tony that, you know, you go through it, and after a while you learn to work it, and you learn to deal with it, and you learn the lessons of it, and it's very helpful in a weird way. You know, once you manage to, you know, you tend to swing from different sides to side, especially on the opposition. You know, first you try one thing, then you try another thing, doesn't work, you try to balance it out, and, you know, it takes a while to work through. So, you know, I think that patience, you know, is the best advice. You know, people that have difficult places, I'm not going to say, oh, it's going to be easy for you, but it's also a question of with these configurations, you've got the strength to do it. You really do. You just have to work it. I mean, that's the thing, you know.
Well, it's actually a blessing because it's one of those divine challenges that if you work it and you do it and you go for it and you have the courage and determination to work through your challenges rather than hide out someplace, that you learn from them and you develop yourself toward you're self-actualizing when you're working on your challenges. And so it's the really blessings in disguise. We suffer, but, you know, that's why the Buddhists say, you know, there's no enlightenment without suffering, you know. So, you know, some of these difficult type of things, like the T-square, is not necessarily a bad thing. And that's what I try to impart to clients. I mean, they may have it, but you can help them develop and understand themselves at that level faster than they would if they didn't have that information.
That's really important. There's no enlightenment without suffering. Because that puts it to good use, right? That really puts it to good use. You know, this is one thing I've always wished could be done, and you make an allusion to this in your book in the section about tarot counseling. I'm going to bounce back to tarot for a minute. You talked about the Rorschach inkblot test, and like that, tarot doesn't easily lend itself to research purposes because it doesn't have, say, something that you could measure, a psychological variable, like how do you know that this card is or isn't a fit. But you say that according to tarot scholar Stuart Kaplan, tarot, like other tests, can serve to elicit responses that can then be evaluated in a standard diagnostic term or other criteria.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd love to hear if you want to talk about this, because you talk about someone that did, a psychologist that did a pilot study with recovering victims of spousal abuse and family violence, and then they analyzed the position of each card and assumed that each card stood for something in that person's psyche. I thought that was fascinating, and it'd be interesting. I don't know if you know anything in terms of what's been found for how
statistically significant. Well, that was Art Rosengarten's book, Tarot and Psychology, or Psychology and Tarot. I don't remember which way it went. But Art Rosengarten did some research around that. And basically, he's working with pathology and assigning different types of pathology to each card, you know, and it gets a little complicated. I don't know that. And then Mary Greer also did some research. So it's very researchable. It's just that it's a very complicated system to learn. It takes several years. And so people are busy doing other things, I guess.
Right. What was,
but there's
what
still
was
research in tarot going on.
I love
I don't
to
know.
Hear that.
I don't do it, so I can't really tell you any real specifics, and I don't want to do research. You know, it's not my thing.
Right, right. What was Mary Greer's research, do you recall?
It's on my Alternative Journal of Nursing, and I don't remember. Oh, I was going to get that information, but it just I think it's like in 2004 or something like that. There's an archive section, and it's on that website. And it's basically she's having people identify what they see in the cards, you know, people who don't know about tarot, and then assigning an emotion to them and then measuring that.
And whether it correlated with their life experience? Okay.
Whether it correlated with the actual meaning of the card. And she found that people actually could interpret it without any kind of background.
So basically it wasn't studying the significance of the card to their experience and whether it matched. What it was saying is whether the person could have an ability to read tarot without any training.
I don't remember. And, you know, I'm just bringing this up because it's there, and I didn't even think about it ahead of time, so I didn't look at it. So, and I haven't looked at it for a while, but it's on Alternative Journal of Nursing. If you wanted to Google that, you could get right to it and then go to the archive section and just kind of look for Mary Greer's.
Actually, I think I'm going to look that up this week. That's great. That's great. In terms of being a counselor who uses tarot, you talk about using it in psychotherapy with mental health clients, but you do make an interesting comment that counselors don't use the tarot imagery with acute care patients because they may be in a survival state of mind. Can you talk about that? Because I think
people may come to us. Yeah,
what
we were talking about that with Maslow's pyramid. It's the same thing, you know. You just, if somebody was in crisis, I think I was writing to nurses when I wrote that. And when you're in crisis, you're in the emergency room. And so if somebody's in an emergency room, you don't pull out your cards and try to help them with that, with mental issues or psychological issues or spiritual issues. You're just going to stop the bleeding first.
Right. Right. Another thing in terms of self-work is you had spoken to this earlier about dream work and what you do with dream work.
Uh-huh.
Can you talk about how we can work with dreams and archetypes?
Dreams and archetypes. Well, the dreams are full of archetypes. And basically it's the same as tarot cards, or for me it is, you know, because the two are one, you know, because when you shuffle the tarot card you and lay it out, it's like having a dream.
That's true. And now you're interpreting it.
You know, like, you know, I think you were talking about a baby in your dreams not too long ago. You know, that's an archetype, a child,
mm-hmm.
a newborn. Weren't you? I think you were.
I had a squirrel dream where...
Oh, okay, maybe it was somebody else that had the baby dream.
Yeah. but it's interesting you say that because, well, let's talk about this for a minute because instead of tarot cards, let's talk about this as a dream and you'll see how we narrow it down to an archetype. Okay, the dream was kind of simple. In the dream, my son was looking out of our living room window and there was this little, you know, those little child swings that are plastic
yeah.
that you put babies in and you strap them in? Well, there was a baby squirrel in this little tiny swing like that and he was like sitting there like he was trapped, harnessed in too tight. He couldn't
yeah.
move. His family comes over, two other little ones and a mother or five is a grown-up one. They're trying to get him out of it. Now, we wanted to help it out, get out of there, but we thought we would get bit. So we were just, like, watching and waiting. Eventually, they got it out, and they all ran up the tree, and they were safe, and we were relieved. Okay, so simple dream. So then when I asked to interpret it, when we say, what does this mean? Now we're trying to see what's the archetypal stuff that I'm going through. So people started asking questions
something
about...
Stuck. There's something stuck,
yes.
you know, Eight of Swords, and the family's trying to help, you know, what card would that be? You know, that's an archetype, help,
mm-hmm.
family,
like maybe,
help,
maybe the
maybe
Knight
of Cups, or,
cups. Yep,
you know,
yep.
And then you're watching from a distance might be, what would that be? Let's see, Watching, observing would be an archetype. You know, it's all archetypal. You can just pick out the larger archetypes of it and that's basically a dream interpretation technique. If you can pick out the larger symbols in the dream and then say what each one means to you, you know, say you took squirrels, and you did stuck in a swing, or and then family, and then, you know, and then with each word you say, okay, what does squirrel mean to me? And then you write words across the page of what squirrel means to you. And then the second one you'd take, and what does stuck mean to you? And you'd write out what that meant to you. And then you'd go back and circle the best one so that when you were done, you have words circled that stood out to you while you were kind of, you know, working this dream. And so that it never fails to work, to work through the dream symbols that way, or the dream archetypes. I don't know if that...
Right.
It's kind of hard to do that without writing on the board and showing you what I'm talking
yeah.
about. But.
Well, it makes an interesting journaling activity, and I think actually journaling for me is a form of meditation because it
uh-huh.
allows me to be in the moment as I write, and I learn about what I'm going through. So if
right.
I look at the squirrel situation and then we start defining what it means, then we're defining the archetypes like, okay, this fear of helping because I might get bit or something might get hurt when that happens or whatever, something might get damaged. Wanting to rescue could be another archetype that would be
right.
a theme. Like all these different things. What Paula Chafee Scaramaglia had done with us when she was on our show, she does all dream interpretations, is take each of those pieces, like you said, getting bit, and then put a card down and see what it says about getting bit. Or squirrel, what is a squirrel? Put a card down, what does squirrel mean? And you can journal on how it interacts
oh, yeah.
with
I
that.
I can see how that would work, but it would be only what would work if best if you had the dreamer throwing the cards.
Well, that's it. Yeah, you'd have to, because it is to that person a unique experience.
Right.
And you even mentioned this in yours, that if you're ever interpreting a dream with someone, what you should say is, well, if I were in your dream, because
mm-hmm.
we can't.
This was my dream, yeah.
Yeah, if this reminds you, yeah, because we can't say what, say, squirrel means to that person. Maybe they have a fear of squirrels, or maybe they
right.
work with squirrels in rehab, and there's a different, I always say
yeah.
use the spider experience. Well, you know, what if you have a person that is obsessed with spiders and loves spiders versus the woman who's deathly terrified of them? To each of them, the dream
yeah.
would be something different.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit, let's get outside of tarot. You mentioned some really interesting decks and how certain decks lend themselves really well in terms of pulling out archetypes. You talk a little bit about animal spirits, knowledge cards. You talk, one of the ones that you mentioned is one of my favorite decks is the Tao Oracle.
Right,
64
yeah.
cards with artwork, and there's really a Taoist philosophy behind it, and it's based on the I Ching. Do you want to talk just briefly about how oracle cards can speak to us?
Well, basically they do the same thing as the tarot. You know, you shuffle them and your energy is mixed with their energy. And, you know, synchronistically, I don't know how it works, but it's pretty amazing. In fact, when I wrote my first book, I was in nursing and I thought, you know, if I go writing a book about tarot, people are going to think I'm crazy, you know, just like, and this was like 2002 or something when I was thinking about writing this book, but I could take it, I could take any stack of cards and do the same thing, you know, and I wouldn't have to say tarot at all, you know, but I finally decided that, no, I just had too much respect for tarot and the synchronicity of it all to cut it out, you know, but you could take any of these cards and use them the same way you'd use tarot. And the animal deck, the animal decks I use differently because sometimes people need a symbol to take home with them. Say for the squirrel, you know, for instance, say you needed to you know, just find a place to hole up and hibernate for the winter. You know, that's something that squirrel does. And when you're talking about animals, you use them as symbols according to their attributes, you know, whatever they, whatever they mean to you or whatever they mean universally, you know, you can draw from all of that and use it to, I'll give you an example. I had a woman, a client who came to me after her husband was killed, and she was having a little trouble with her grieving process, and the animal, at the end of our session, I thought maybe she could use an animal totem. And so I had her draw from the animal deck. And she drew this beautiful lion, and she talked about the courage of the lion. And it just really impacted her to the point that she, I scanned the card and blew it up so that it was a nice full-page image of this courageous lion, and she took it down and had it framed, and she hung it on her wall, and she said that was the most helpful thing that she's ever had in her life, you know, just that reminder and that actual courage coming from that archetype on the wall, that lion.
That's really important, and, you know, I hope that when people do email readings, there's an opportunity to send that client a picture of that card, and I always like to send them the images. And what I found is that I actually carry around decks that have missing cards. I buy decks with missing cards. You get them really, really cheap.
Uh-huh.
And I will give some, like, say you're talking about the strength type vibe, I would give them a strength card from the deck, and you'll find that years later the person will come to you with that beat up card in their wallet. You know,
yeah.
that it meant that much to them, like that person
yeah.
framing it on their wall. So I hope
yeah.
that when people do, say, email readings, there's your opportunity. You can just attach it as a file, a little picture of
right.
it. And but remind and encourage the person to carry it with them, too. Sometimes you have to really put the idea there, say, you know, this is for you. Study this image. Carry it around in your pocket. You know, see what it means to you
right.
as a person.
Well, I, when I do readings, I usually don't do email readings, but when I do phone readings, I have people buy their own deck because, and I have recommended decks on my website that they can use. And because when I hang up the phone an hour and a half later,
they still have the layout, and they still have all those powerful images with them. And every one of them is powerful. You know, it means something to them. And,
right.
You know, it just goes from there, you know. It continues to work.
It does.
Very powerful stuff, these archetypes. Because, you know, we have them operating in all of us, and so we can recognize them when we see them, these forces
all the time
of nature.
Right, and we experience different archetypes with different people. You know, different. They say every person that you meet, you have a different personality with that person, you know, the way your energy vibes together, and it's almost like you become different archetypes for different people.
Right.
Your other book, the one that's called Messages from the Archetypes, Using Tarot for Healing and Spiritual mm-hmm. Growth, can you tell us a little bit about how that differs from the Gaining Archetypal Vision book?
The Messages from the Archetypes was my first attempt at writing, and I got an editor to work with me, and his name is on the front, Mark Robert Waldman. And basically, I wrote the whole thing, but I was so totally amazed with the synchronicity and the tarot readings and how helpful they were to everyone. Now, keep in mind, I didn't come onto tarot until I was almost 50. And by the time I was reading to the public, I was over 50. And so you have maturity there as well, and plus all my education was done, you know. And so my readings are very good, you know, I haven't had a bad one, you know. And it's just like, my goodness, this is something I just have to shout this from the rooftops. And the first chapter is, the introduction, I talk about my process of getting there, but the first chapter is about how I started working at Brighton Bush with tarot cards on people who would let me, you know, practice on them and see how if I could use this in wellness counseling having to do with their illness or their injury, and it works wonderfully. And so, I just had to write it. That's all there was to it. It was not whether I wanted to or not. I had to do it, you know. And so this is like my message to a lot of nurses and other people who are in the healing arts, that tarot works.
It does.
And it works
and
very well.
And it is an excellent healing tool.
Yeah.
Now, what I'd like to try is something hands-on. I want to show people how, even though parts of this book may not, the one that we started out, the Gaining Archetypal Vision, your second book, even though there may not be tarot spreads in it, how we can use some of your stuff for a tarot spread, and it's just like rich with material. So do you happen to have a deck in front of you, Tony?
I do.
Okay. So pick your favorite. Yep, and if you want to, and Valerie, you can help us with this too, and even
okay.
if you want to add astrology stuff in this, you talk about Maslow's Hierarchy of Needs. He wrote a book in 1954 called Motivation and Personality, and he talks about, instead of studying people with psychological problems, the immature, the unhealthy ones, the crippled people, what he decided to do is to study exemplary people like Albert Einstein and James Adams and Eleanor Roosevelt, healthy college students, and he felt that that could help us gather more information about what people needed in order to grow and develop. And then he outlined those into a pyramidal shape like you talked about. So let's talk about, we can put these cards into a pyramid, or we can just talk about these 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We'll pull just 5 cards and we'll quickly go through them. The first level is what you need for survival, and then the last level, the most advanced, is what you need for self-actualization to become your full potential and realizing
now,
who are we talking to?
Are we talking personally, or are we talking about the collective?
Let's pretend we're doing a reading on an actual person, so we can apply this to, this will be for someone in our audience. Somebody will need to hear this. But this will be kind of like a proverbial person, just our mythology.
Okay.
Archetype person will be, you know, just sitting in front of
basically
us.
Basically,
so,
the collective.
There may be something in here for everybody. So let's talk about if we were to look at the first card, so that would be at the first level. This is the literal requirements for survival. So air, water, food, sleep, sex, homeostasis, and excretion. You say this is what we need in order to be alive. It's like basic survival. So if you pull a card, which card do you get?
I got the Four of Cups for the physiological.
Interesting.
Which is, I see that, you know, I'm thinking the collective, and I'm thinking, you know, in our country right now, it's about where we're at. You know, there's discontent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's something being handed to the fellow. I have the Rider-Waite deck out.
Okay.
So there's something being handed to him, but he's just got his hands crossed over his chest, and he's not taking it. So I see this as being, you know, what's happening in the United States right now.
And we could take it literally, too, talking about water and the need for water or what we're doing to our water. We could talk about it at an emotional level where cups are emotions and how that is impacting our survival and perhaps having that ambivalence because that card is very, do you care or don't care? Because he has a very I don't care look about him.
Mm-hmm.
That people don't seem to care about the world itself or are we caring about what we need to? Valerie, do you have something you want to add in terms of what either astrology adds or what you see in that card in terms of survival?
I was just looking at the four, you know, as the foundation, you know, it's kind of like here's where you have to deal with, you know, the basics of life and, you know, are they being met or are they not? And, you know, Four of Cups kind of saying there's something, I mean, it could even like that message collectively, like could be there's something wrong with the foundation of how we've established things and therefore we have to take a look at, you know, what's going on with that, like what's lacking in the foundation, what's missing, what's, you know, why are we discontent? Is there a reason? I mean, yeah, I guess there's things that are things falling apart, you know, just that four as kind of four square foundation, you know, the gateway to anything. So I think that's what attracted me, just looking at the four, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and maybe we don't care. Maybe things are falling apart and we're too busy with other things to care, and that will keep that foundation from being
Or too or too out of it, you know, or too distracted,
or
too,
jobless.
You know. Yeah.
What'd you say, Tony?
Too jobless.
Yeah.
Too unemployed.
Jobless. And also getting stuck in inconsequential details sometimes, like we do in life, and we forget about
mm-hmm.
the important things. Yeah. Okay, so that would be the first level. So let's pick another card for the second level. Now, the second level is about safety needs. They dominate our behavior. So they would include things like security of the body, resources,
mm-hmm.
morality, the family health and well-being.
Okay. I have the Knight of Cups in the Rider-Waite deck.
Okay.
And, you know, this is a person that's on a journey to find himself. He's on the proverbial healing journey.
So this particular level, meaning health and security, that would show particular good health. The Knight of Cups is, I see that as a positive.
Not necessarily good health, but it's a beginning journey. That's the way I see the Knight of Cups. And, you know, he's starting out on the journey. I see him as Parsifal on his journey to find the
I see.
You know, so,
okay, so it's the start of that.
Everyone is here to heal, I think. You know, and if they're not, they're normals, and that's another story. But if the people that are here, most of the people are here to heal themselves of something, and that's our divine challenges and our blessings that I was talking about earlier is that, you know, it's like the T-square, you know, okay, we've got this hard, difficult path, and so we're just going to start out, and I'm going to make the best of it. And I'm going to find out what this is and how to take care of it. And, you know, the Knights are very determined, courageous people.
Right. Okay, so that's great. So that shows courage and safety. So he's on, that's a very, I think that's a positive, he's on his way, but you're saying it's just the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's on his way. He's on the horse, and he's got the cup in his hand, and he's pointed in a direction, and he's got the look on his face like, oh, this is a journey.
Yep. Valerie, what do you see in that card?
I think I'm just looking at it with the four. You know, if you look at the four as kind of more of a stasis, and then you see, I think, with the Knight of Cups, there's a starting to move. So to me, that almost is like the flowing of, you know, in a human, it could be the flowing of the vascular system or the flowing of fluids through the body. So to me, it looks like there's a movement. You know, it's almost like a physical feel of a flowing through a system. So maybe it started with like the four with the stagnation and discontent, but there's a chance that like of a flow now, something starting to move. You know, that's the way I feel with that.
He picked himself up by his bootstraps there.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Up on the horse, and he's going to take care of this challenge.
Yeah, and two cup cards have started
us
off here. Yeah. Okay, so the third level now is social needs involving feelings of belongingness. This is like community. So this aspect of the hierarchy involves emotionally based relationships of friends and family and intimacy. So this is interesting because you say, according to Maslow, most people don't develop beyond this level. At this level, people can be reasonably happy, and so they become complacent, like the four cups, and don't heed the innate call towards further growth. So these upper levels that will be coming up are higher levels that need to develop as we get more spiritual. So we're talking about like the most basic thing. So let's talk about social and belongingness. Which card comes up for that one?
Well, I got the Eight of Cups, which
another
cup.
What cups?
Yeah. Well, it's the Eight of Cups, and it's this. The Rider-Waite shows the lower levels of it. You know, like this person is very disappointed and he's kind of walking away, type of thing. But the Eight of Cups can also have a light side. You know, like it's part of the journey, and we're at the Eight of Cups, and Nine of Cups is next, and then the Ten of Cups. So we're almost there.
Yeah, and actually the Ten of Cups, those cups could be all the people, and he's moving on into the next stage of development as well. You know, he could have done everything that he needed to do, and now he's moving to the next level. Mm-hmm. Interesting. But he's also looks like in doing that, he's moving away from the crowd. Mm-hmm. So become more spiritual. He's moving away from the line of cups and off into solitude, like kind of like the hermit.
Probably moving towards the Nine of Cups.
The dream come true, yeah. Yep. Valerie?
Yeah, we see the Eight of Cups is sort of one of those cards where you know that you have to do it, kind of something's been nagging at you for a while, and you go away with a certain amount of sadness, but at the same time you know it's inevitable, so you begin the journey. I mean, like you know it has to happen. So you go through with more wisdom, maybe a little bit of sadness, but you know that it's time. So this is kind of like a timing card. It's just like it's time to move on. You know, it's an eight card. So it's a very powerful card with the eight, I think. To me, they're always very Plutonian cards, very sort of, you know, that Scorpio feel, that sort of darkness, you know, before the dawn kind of feeling where you know it's time to take off and you know it's time to go. It's inevitable and you have to do it. And it's not always happy, but it's essential. I mean, because you have, it's not like you have to do it. You know you have to do it. And you may know it's even past due to do it, but you do it. So it's like kind of moving up again, you know, from the Knight of Cups. You get moving and then you move to where, you know, you know you have to go.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe it's hard for most of us to get, where Maslow said most of us don't get past the stage.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's sad and difficult and lonely because we don't want to separate from the crowd to learn. And interesting, I tie this into what you said before, Tony, about without pain and without suffering, there is no enlightenment. And there is a dark aspect to this card of going into the dark and into the unknown, and it's a very gray card. So perhaps that person is starting to journey into something deeper through difficult experiences and moving away from the crowd in order to find out their own answers, their own truths.
Mm-hmm.
Spiritual
Sounds
growth.
Good.
Okay, so the fourth card or the fourth level. So now this is where everyone needs to be respected and to have self-esteem and self-respect. I agree with this. It's the normal human desire to be accepted and valued by other people. Some people will seek fame or glory, which is external acceptance, and that depends on other people. But at this level, you come to the realization that you must first accept and love yourself. So let's talk about this fourth level of respect. It'd be interesting to see what comes up, if it's a community card from other people or if we get it from solitude. What do you get for this card, Tony?
I have the Six of Pentacles.
Other people.
Oh, giving of yourself to others, you know, and there's a balance to this card as well. You know, so it's a balancing act of giving to others and giving to your community and giving to your family and taking care of yourself, you know, at the same time. You know, see, he's got the scales in his hand, so he's not just counting money. He's saying, how much time is this going to take away from my needs? You know, so this is a big balance, and this is a balance of what we all have to look at. This is pretty common. You know, balancing the needs of others, you know, with taking care of ourselves.
Right. Are we living our own lives? Are we living the wishes of another person, the give and take? And also, in order to be...
time alone and in meditation or doing what you need to do.
Yeah. What do you see in this card, Valerie?
Yeah, I think similar, you know, proper use of resources and, you know, of our own resources and others and, you know, the idea of being charitable and charity and what do we accept and what do we give and how do we take. And I think it's, you know, how do we really act in the world? You know, it's a, you know, what do we take from things, what do we give to things, and how do we find a balance? You know, it's a lot about worth and about value. And so I guess that fits in with the idea of, you know, you want to be respected or your self-esteem. You know, do you get it from the outside world or are you building something, you know, with Pentacles, are you building something that's going to, you know, live after you, or how are you interacting with others to build these things? It's kind of a give and take card, definitely.
Yeah, it's like that phrase, to everything there's a season, there's a time to give, and there's a time to take. And there are times when we become the man that's standing, who's above the other people, where we have more resources, and we have to pass down. And that's respecting those who need it. But it will also gain you respect because you're nourishing your community. But there are times when we're the shorter people, the ones on our knees, when we need assistance from other people. And that's a really hard place to be. And it's hard for some people, even when they're there and they could take, to allow themselves to reach out and accept it. So to be respected, to feel respected when you're taking, when we're looking at this fourth level of respect, can be really hard, whether it's unemployment check or getting some kind of charitable something from somebody when you find yourself in a spot when you need assistance. That's an interesting card. Okay, so the last one is the fifth level, is that self-actualization, your full potential, realizing all that you could be and becoming it. To attain this step, the requirement is you have to have a strong personal commitment. And Maslow describes this as the desire to become everything that you're capable of becoming. I think so many of us feel that pull. We're constantly sucked toward that, like the tide toward the moon. We feel the pull. So what card do you get for that?
I have the Six of Wands. The guy on the horse with the olive wreath in his hair, and he's winning. You know, this is a victory card. You know,
another
made
six
it.
Card too. Yeah. Getting
and
there.
You make it by yourself. There's a whole crowd back there. Or else they're cheering you on.
Interesting, because community came, even though he pulled back from the community in that third level and kind of walked away and went through difficult stuff. It's like in the end he's still integrated and he becomes a part of life anyway. You know, you can't stay away forever. You have to, the spiritual essence of life is how we interact. Valerie, what do you see in that Six of Wands?
That's like a very, you know, that's like that Jupiter and Leo card. Yeah, that's very exuberant. You know, that's like sort of getting the fruits of, you know, whatever you've gone through. You know, like say you've gone through all these things, as we saw earlier, you know, in the first four cards. And this is coming out at the other end, just being happy, you know, that you've achieved something. And it's just, it's kind of, it's an uplifting feeling, you know, with like a fire energy with, you know, and with Jupiter, the feel of Jupiter, really expansive. So you feel like, you know, here I am at this level, and can I go even further? You know, like, can I take it even further? So you're like, maybe you're getting the awards for this, or you're getting the recognition, but then you're thinking, well, you know, okay, how much further can I go? Because you're feeling I think it's the confidence, you know, the confidence level of, you know, I can do this, so what else can I do? You know, like, how can I be the best I can be? So it's sort of like an ever-expanding process, you know?
Get kind of addicted to the self-actualization part.
That can be it, too.
Yeah, and this is the card of being recognized, whether you recognize it in yourself or other people start to see all that you are and cheering you on and or understanding that the joy that you feel of getting something and having achieved. But how interesting that the spread went from apathy to victory. So the first level was not caring, and the second one is, the last one is like jumping through that hoop at the end of a football game when you win, getting the trophy. And what a perfect card for self-actualization.
It basically shows the path to self-actualization. You know, when you're starting out, you know, you're just getting your needs taken care of. You've got, you know, the Four of Cups, you don't have a lot, you know, and you're dissatisfied, but you get determined and you're going to start off on your journey with the Knight of Cups. And part of that journey has to do with, you know, hiding away and getting to know yourself, getting to know the dark places of yourself. And then you go out and you help people maybe too much, and you decide that, you know, that's not working, so you got to back up a little bit and try to find a balance in that. And then finally you get it all figured out, and you got it, you know, when you're in your second Saturn return, you know. Things kind of pulled together.
That's awesome. What an awesome process. Now, we had people in the chat room ask about whether you do webinars or anything online. Do you teach online?
There's some webinars at the Global Spiritual Studies. There's two. One is about gaining archetypal vision, an interview I did with Linda Marson. And the other one is about developmental stuff, and we're going to redo that one. And so it's down for now. But I think they'll find a lot of information on my personal website. I'm a writer, and so I've written a lot about all of this, and I have put my published articles up on that. Plus, I've done radio, and so there's some radio slots there, too.
Now, and you have a workshop. Who will be there? This one will be there. Oh, excellent. Yes, to help teach.
Plus,
you have a workshop,
Archetypal
Tarot Counseling?
Yeah, Archetypal Tarot Counseling at Brighton Bush in April. And that's under workshops. You can read about that on my personal website, too. But basically, it's a three-phase program, and it'll take 3 years to go through. And every year, once a year, we meet at Brighton Bush, and during the year, we're in contact with a chat line. And so I'm teaching people how I do tarot counseling.
And do they need to have any background in tarot to participate in that?
Not on phase one. Phase two, I'm asking that they have some classes in psychology, because they need to know the basic vocabulary.
Right.
You know,
so. Okay. But those are not on the web. Those are live in-person workshops,
right,
with
and
you.
And it could be reading a book, too, because I think psychology is self-taught as well. In fact, most of what you learn in psychology is self-taught.
And what about, you have a certification for archetypal counseling?
Yes, at the end of 3 years, then they'll be certified by me for archetypal tarot counseling. And this is endorsed by the Association of Humanistic Psychology, my program.
Excellent. That's fabulous.
Can't get CEUs yet because they just don't believe in tarot yet.
Tarot. They don't get it.
No, they don't get it. I don't know if they ever will, you know, at that level. I just don't know. It's been around 600 years. Yeah. Although, you know, to be fair, it's only been the last 20 where it's really become intense, and where people have really started picking up on what an incredible tool this is to help yourself through life.
Excellent.
So Matt, we're just early. You know, we're just some of the early ones.
That's wonderful. So is there anything you want to add before we shut down?
No, I think we've pretty well covered everything.
Very good. Very good. So TonyGilbert.com, you can learn a lot more there, all about archetypes. I think the different stages of archetypes in her book are really important to us as readers. And thank you for joining us. It's really nice
You're
to
welcome.
Have you. really nice to have you along, and I learned a lot through
fun.
Your book. Thank you for that. And we have some wonderful things coming up. Next week we have Robert Place coming again. He'll be talking about alchemy and its Egyptian origins. He has a lot of background with alchemy and his alchemical tarot, so we'll be talking about some of that stuff on April 1st. There's actually, in April, we're only going to have two shows, so it's going to be kind of a month where there's not going to be a lot. And there's going to be our second of the panel that we had with tarot readers, Boundaries for Tarot Readers. That was a very well-received show. We had Thalassa and Georgie, James Wells, Sharon, Diane, Marcy Currier. We talked all about different things you need to do as a reader to protect yourself in many different ways with clients and reading. So we'll expand on that a little bit because there was much that we didn't cover. And then on the 15th, there's 2 weeks later, our tarot intensive. That's on the female aces, the female twos. And that will be talking all about just the Two of Pentacles and the Two of Cups through the entire show. Those are a very popular shows because we're talking about the structure of tarot, and it's like an actual class. And that's it for April because we have Reader Studio at the end. Many people will be going there. I do want to talk to you about our four words for the week from the Universal Deck, and those four words, I always find now that these have to do with the show that we're doing, and this definitely agrees here. The four words are surrender, healing, trust, and balance. So I hope you all go, oh, you know what? I would like to give you I gathered a quote for you. I didn't put it on my show notes. And it was all about archetypes, and now I can't find where I put it. So you know what I think? Let me just see real quickly if I can find on my handout that I had. I always like to close with a little quote. Here we go. Okay, so your quote is by Paul Anderson, who said, "We live with our archetypes, but can we live in them?" That's sometimes the hardest thing to do. So thank you so much, and thanks everybody for joining us, and I hope you have a wonderful tarot-filled week. Go out and do something really fabulous for your week. Thanks, Valerie.
Good night. Good night. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Tony.
Bye.